All right, Sean, it is podcast o'clock on a Friday. We obviously have to talk about the Supreme Court decision on Wisconsin's gerrymandering case, but how do we want to get at this thing?
Well, I was thinking that people might have some questions about what the U.S. Supreme Court did and didn't do in Wisconsin's gerrymandering case.
For example?
Well, you may ask yourself, what do you mean the case was remanded? And you may ask yourself, what happened to Justice Kennedy? And you may ask yourself, were plaintiffs right? Were plaintiffs wrong? And you may say to yourself, my God, when will this dispute end?
Well, works for me. Let's talk about it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And this week, let's talk about the Supreme Court decision that left Wisconsin's redistricting case.
Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. Same as it ever was.
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by.
So sorry, everyone, for butchering the Talking Heads hit Once in a Lifetime, which I'm learning on Wikipedia was produced and co-written by Brian Eno. But it's a good way to get started on this conversation about SCOTUS. Without Laurel this week, unfortunately, because she's off doing something lame like getting married. So Sean and I are here to keep this boat afloat.
Yeah, whatever. Her loss. It was her choice. So she has to miss the fun stuff, I guess.
All right, Sean. So this was your big idea. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I guess I've talked to a few people about this Supreme Court case, and we love talking about this Supreme Court case, right? But they came away from the news of Monday and what the Supreme Court did in this case with different reads on what the court did. And I think that's partly because the way that the court handled this case, Wisconsin's case, is a little bit unusual and extremely anticlimactic. You know, I guess in a nutshell, the court did not end things. Things are the same as it ever was. Same as it ever was. That's The redistricting case, Wisconsin's redistricting case, is still alive, and the court has not answered this question that they've had floating out there for decades of whether or not they can wade into redistricting cases like this one, political gerrymandering claims like this one.
Mm-hmm. And so you're saying that these people that you've talked to anecdotally just don't know anything. They don't get it.
No.
And so you want to explain it to them.
No, I feel a sense of guilt because these people have looked at news coverage from around the globe, no doubt, including our own, and they've come away not quite clear about what happened. So it is from that sense of guilt that I want to try to make it right. I want to try to make it right and talk through these little elements of the story. We've got some more time to talk about it now because we're in podcast time. There is no time in podcast time.
Time's a flat circle, bro.
Yes. So I kind of wanted to dive into some of the stuff that that you might have had a question about in the coverage.
I mean, I understand it all myself. I have no questions. But for the benefit of listeners out there, what was the gist of the ruling that came down on Monday?
So the gist of the ruling is that Wisconsin's case was remanded because the court said that the plaintiffs who brought the case didn't have standing. So I don't know why anybody would hear that and say they don't know what happened. We all know what standing is and remanded. These are terms we use in our daily lives, of course. And so one of the ways that we all described it in various publications and experts described it as they were describing the ruling was that the Supreme Court punted.
All right, Sean. So what is a punt?
you're laughing because it's like a dumb question, right? But there are people out there that don't know what a punt is. And in the context of a Supreme Court case, what do you mean the Supreme Court punted? All right.
Well, they picked up the ball and dropped it and kicked it with their leg toward the opposing team.
Yeah. So in football, which I know that you watch a lot of and obsess
over. I was friends
over.
With the son of a Super Bowl winning punter from the Denver Broncos, I'll have you know.
So you know all about punting.
Shout
obviously.
Out to Bucky Diltz.
But in punting, okay, I know this is ridiculous that we're describing this, but seriously, I think it helped frame it because if you're playing football, a team has four downs to make it 10 yards. All right. And if they don't, they turn the ball over. So rather than make that high risk play, and say, like, we're going to go for it. They will sometimes punt and say, well, you know, we'll play it safe here. We'll kick the ball back to the other team way down the field. P- punting is like not taking decisive action. It is playing it safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the Supreme Court did here in punting is they had this really thorny issue of whether or not courts can wade into redistricting in a political gerrymandering case. That is, can a court say there is a line at which you can be too partisan in the redrawing of political maps to the point that you violate the constitutional rights of voters from the other party? This is a question that the court has struggled with for decades. Justice Anthony Kennedy back in 2004 said, you know, we're just not there yet, but maybe someday we'll be there.
If there was a viable metric.
Yeah, yeah. He's the one that put it out there. And so, lo and behold, this Wisconsin case makes it up to the court. A district court said that, yes, this is the case for you, Supreme Court. And here you go. Do what you will with it. Put your stamp on American democracy. And the Supreme Court didn't wade into it at all. They said,
John Roberts said, this is not your beautiful case.
This is not the case we're looking for, at least not with these particular plaintiffs.
Or to use the football metaphor, instead of trying to go for a first down, he decided we're going to remand the case back down to the federal district level based on standing without ruling on merits.
Yeah, this is what really stuck out to me.
As quarterbacks often say.
Right. Aaron Rodgers, you'll sometimes hear him saying that. This play is remanded. So this is what's really stuck out to me from the Supreme Court decision from Roberts. Roberts wrote for the court here, and he was joined in, you know, to one degree or another by all nine justices in remand in saying that this case didn't have standing. So he's saying that, you know, his whole opinion was about whether or not the plaintiffs had been injured.
Mm-hmm.
Basically. So normally when a redistricting case comes up to the court, it's brought by plaintiffs who live in districts that have been redrawn to diminish that plaintiff's voice in the, you know, democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin's case had plaintiffs who sued on a statewide basis. They said, you know, the lead plaintiff, for example, William Whitford, lives in Madison. It's going to be a Democratic district no matter what. But he said, because of this map, I have lost my ability to affect policy in the Wisconsin legislature. You have made it impossible for Democrats to win. I am a Democrat. Therefore, I can sue.
Mm-hmm.
And the court said, no, you can't. You know, not in this case. You can't do that. So they just sent it back. What struck me about this case, though, is that Roberts didn't get into whether or not maybe you could do a political gerrymandering case. He did not at all.
That's what it means. The case was not remanded based on merit.
Yes,
right?
He said, we're not ruling on the merit. That was like his money quote. We're not ruling on the merit. What does that mean? It means we're not taking a position on the most complicated issue facing American democracy today, according to some. We're not taking a position here. And Justice Elena Kagan writes a concurring opinion. She is joined by the other justices. So you had four justices who were all nominated by Democratic presidents. And they said, you know, to be clear, we join that opinion in full, that you can't, that
sue
this case.
Wide. They didn't have the standing
that
to
they
sue.
That they hadn't satisfied standing. And then you had, you know, Justice Thomas and Gorsuch. Thomas filed his own concurrence, said, yeah, we also agree. However, we're just going to point out that normally when you say that you don't have standing, we as the court dismiss the case. And so that's what we should have done here.
Mm-hmm. But that's not what happened.
No, that's the other weird thing about this case is that the court decided to let it live. That even though, you know, John Roberts and Samuel Alito may someday come down against a case like this, we don't know. They decided not to weigh in on it today, and they let the case live.
Mm-hmm.
And
by kicking it back down to a federal, is it district court level?
It's federal district court. So it's a special panel, a three-judge panel that was set up to handle this.
Yeah, I remember the three-judge panel.
Yeah, you got an appellate judge. You got a couple district court judges, federal judges. You know, it's referred to as the district court in these cases. So they sent it back there. And so that case is absolutely alive. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court left it that way, despite what you would assume are some differing opinions when it comes to cases like these between the judges, the justices who were nominated by Republican presidents and those nominated by Democrats. The justices kept it alive. They sent it back to the district court. So same as it ever was, there is still a redistricting case in Wisconsin that could still go to the U.S. Supreme Court and could still set a precedent one way or the other in these cases. It just hasn't done it yet.
So what would they need to escape the droning proclamation of David Burns and make it not the same as it ever was? What would Mr. Whitford or other Democratic voters in Wisconsin have to do to bring the case and the issue back before the court?
Well, Mr. Whitford might need some buddies next time that were scattered around in districts throughout Wisconsin, say like 20 or 30 state assembly districts, and districts where they could point out that, hey, because of this map, I am in a district where my voice in the democratic process has been diminished. You've made it nigh impossible for me to translate my vote and votes like mine in this district into a legislative seat.
You know? So he's like, you know, hey, my friend Andy, who I play basketball with, he's over there in the 23rd. His vote is getting watered down.
Yeah.
And so is my Aunt Cheryl, who's up in the 47th. And we have this whole cluster of people here.
Yeah.
And their votes are just not making a difference because their districts are drawn unfairly. Mr. and Mrs. Court Justices, will you look at this case again?
That's kind of what they would do. Yeah. And they would join in unison and they would lock arms and they would say, we are the plaintiffs you've been looking for. But that's one way they could do it, is they just, instead of saying, look, this has statewide implications. I, as a plaintiff in Madison, can sue to overturn the entire map. They would need to go district by district,
mm-hmm.
like you do in normal redistricting cases, and find a bunch of people. Now, plaintiff's attorneys say, no big deal. And if we get 20 to 30 plaintiffs,
mm-hmm.
then it's essentially a statewide claim anyway. And
because if enough districts are invalidated, mm-hmm. it sort of invalidates the map.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if the Supreme Court were to agree with them, then you're redrawing, at the point that you're redrawing 30 state assembly districts, there are only 99 of them. So you're essentially asking to redraw the entire map at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was one way they could do it. Another way Justice Kagan went into in her concurring opinion, which was kind of like, her concurring opinion was like, hey, you know, I'm not saying this would work, but you might want to consider some things that this guy, Justice Anthony Kennedy, wrote in 2004. He's big on bringing these gerrymandering cases as like a First Amendment claim. That's Justice Anthony Kennedy.
You know here. That guy?
Yeah. I work with him. I'm not saying I'm speaking for him here, but he did write about this a lot. So you might want to consider more of an emphasis on a First Amendment claim that your freedom, your right to association has been violated here. And that might, you know, maybe that would be successful in the court. I mean, she's laying out this potential template for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way they could potentially do it if they don't go the district by district, get a plaintiff here, get a plaintiff there. She's saying you could essentially create a statewide standing argument if you go about it a different way.
So either way, whether you're taking her advice and changing the angle of your argument, or you're getting up a whole group of folks enough to play a game of Red Rover, either way, that's not going to happen in time to affect the 2018 elections. Maybe 2020?
Yeah, I think that is the next big deadline coming up. Because you're right, 2018 is not going to happen. Everybody acknowledges that. Even if the court had ruled in this case and said, yeah, that is an unconstitutional map, they might not have said, change it by 2018, because they don't typically like to make huge changes like that close to an election. So 2018 is the next big question. And that
2020,
is,
you mean?
So 2020 is the next big date. And here's why that is extremely significant. Because whoever controls the legislature and the governor's office after the 2020 election will draw the next round of maps. Because this happens every 10 years after the U.S. Census. The next census is in 2020. So whoever's in control of state government in 2021, the winners of the 2020 election, will draw the maps that cover Wisconsin for the next decade.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes an especially critical question for the U.S. Supreme Court to answer before 2020, before that next round of redistricting. And if you accept the contention by plaintiffs, and the court hasn't done this, but if you accept the contention by Democratic plaintiffs that the current legislature is an entrenched Republican majority because of these gerrymandered maps, then you know, if that's unconstitutional, then you would have an unconstitutional majority, in essence, drawing the next round of redistricting that would stand for another decade.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
So what if they make a decision before the 2020 election in the sense that they say, all right, before 2020, you need to redraw these maps. And so the results of the 2020 election would be different. And then whoever wins in 2020 based on a new map then redraws the normally redrawn new map, which happens to be a census year. You get what I'm saying?
I do. And so that's what Democrats are hoping. That's like their, I mean, they were hoping for this thing to be resolved in the time for the 2018 election. Because there are going to be some senators elected to four-year terms this year who will be in office in 2021 when they redraw the maps. Okay. So, but that's not going to happen. So what Democrats are hoping for now is that the court does step in well in advance of the 2020 election and says, Wisconsin, redraw these maps. And by doing that, they would be saying, Wisconsin, make them more competitive, you know, in essence, give more Democrats a chance to be elected to the legislature. And if more Democrats are elected to the legislature, well, I think, you know, one very possible scenario is that you would have split control of state government. And if there's split control of state government, that is not when you get new gerrymanders, you know, typically they can't agree. It goes to a court to decide instead of a legislature to draw the maps.
And so I guess, sorry to keep belaboring this. I pretended I didn't have questions, but actually I don't understand anything. So if they were going to, if the court did decide these maps are unconstitutionally partisan, you need to redraw them before the November 2020 vote, who gets first crack at redrawing that in a less partisan way? It's the legislature still, right?
I think it would be. There's a chance the court would say that the court will draw the map based on these standards, but I have a hard time seeing them not first going to the legislature and saying, look, here's what you did wrong. Here's what a competitive map should look like. It should include, you know, sort of these basic principles. Maybe they would get into math and say it should pass this score on the efficiency gap or something like that. I don't know if they'd embrace that or not. But I think the most likely scenario, if the Supreme Court did that, would be they would come back and say, hey, legislature, do this. And then new legal battles would ensue when the legislature would interpret it one way. And, you know, it would get pretty messy. And that would be a year of covering that chaos.
So what are some other options in terms of redrawing maps? I mean, some other states, they do like nonpartisan commissions or whatever. Is that ever going to be an option here?
Well, okay. Before we get to that, I would like to say another option is that the court does nothing. And, you know, this court, this case goes back up there and then they really do weigh in on whether or not courts can decide when redistricting becomes too partisan. And the courts say, no, we can't. same as it ever was. Then you're talking about then you're talking about everything that we know now would continue. So that's one option, the status quo. Another option is that you would have some type of a nonpartisan redistricting commission draw the maps and present the legislature with options of nonpartisan maps, something like they do in Iowa, maybe not exactly under a bill that's here in Wisconsin. That's going to be the thing is you're going to need the legislature to approve that kind of a system.
Yeah.
And Speaker Robin Voss in particular has said, no way. I think his usual point is that he says, he wants people who are accountable to the public to draw the maps.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to go there. It's a catch 22, right? If this is a map that has entrenched Republicans into power, asking those Republicans to change the rules to give themselves
less power
is an unlikely scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the meantime, stating the fact that like this nonpartisan redistricting bill isn't going to go anywhere, probably Democrats are using it as a political issue, or they're trying to in this year's elections. They're saying we're the party that supports nonpartisan redistricting and fair maps, and they're the party that doesn't. And so they're trying to pressure Republicans into either taking a stand that runs contrary to their speaker and other Republican leaders, or coming out and saying, no, I don't favor.
I'm against fairness.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like that's how Democrats want to frame it. Right.
Yeah.
So they're pushing this nonpartisan redistricting plan, this fair maps plan. And if you don't support that, yeah, why don't you like fair? So they're making it a political issue as much as they can in 2018.
Well, that is way more information and questions answered about the Supreme Court ruling on Wisconsin's gerrymandering case than I ever wanted to know. Thank you,
I'm glad that
Sean.
I could oversupply you with information on a case that was decided on a technical detail.
Well, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd. Wait.
And whether you find yourself living in a shotgun shack or behind the wheel of a large automobile, you can subscribe for new episodes of the podcast on iTunes. You can also find it on Google Play and many other podcast apps. And you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime you like at wpr.org/politics.